To better your best and your world, you need to dig deep and grow. Join us as top experts, leaders, and creators uncover powerful insights to help you grow in life and in work. And now, your host, Michael McAvoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Dig Deep Grow, the show dedicated to helping you better your best and your world. I'm your host, Michael McAvoy, and today we're going to be talking about your physical health, specifically about what you do for exercise. Now, in this culture, in the American culture, we have problems on both sides of the coin with exercise. Most people don't exercise enough, even though they're encouraged to. But there's a flip side of it, and maybe one that a lot of people don't know about. And that's the idea that you can actually overdo it. It's called exercise addiction. And we have our guest today, Catherine Schreiber, has just completed a book called The Truth About Exercise Addiction. And we're going to get into that with Catherine right away. But anyway, the book does go into depth about this, about the causes of what causes a person to overdo it with exercise. We'll talk about what the symptoms are, how it works out, and maybe some stories about individuals that have actually gone from one end to the other, have gotten over their addiction. So, Catherine Schreiber, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So, Catherine, first let me ask you, what's your background and the reason that you wrote this book?
Well, my background, as an undergraduate, I studied psychology, and I'm actually pursuing, I'm almost done with my MFA, and I've been in the journal health reporting world ever since graduating college. I used to be an editor at Psychology Today. I've gone on to be a contributing writer to Greatest.com and a variety of other publications. I was galvanized to write this book because I have struggled with exercise addiction since I was about 15 or 16 years old. And when I was writing about it, because I was writing a personal essay with some research about my issue, and I realized in doing the research for the piece that there was such little information out there about this topic, and not only that, but there was no single comprehensive resource that looked at the studies to date that gave people who are concerned advice about how to deal with the issue. You know, they gave people an opportunity to find out where to turn, that illustrated the story. Certainly there were a lot of academic texts out there, but there was nothing for the general public. There were memoirs, but there wasn't anything that combined both the academic research and the, you know, personal stories of sufferers along with the resources. And I thought, you know, I want to do that. My co-author, Heather Hausenblass, who is an exercise addiction researcher, originally collaborated with me on the article I wrote for Greatest.com about my exercise addiction, and she suggested we collaborate on a book. And then several months later, we had our first draft handed into Roman Littlefield.
Wow, fantastic! Well, I guess the initial question I'll ask you, and I kind of would like you to go look at the personality types of people and why one is a couch potato and another is an exercise addict. We'll get into that, but basically, you asked the question, why does a healthy behavior, such as exercise, morph into a dangerous means of self-destruction? So I'll ask you to kind of dive in right with that point.
Yeah, so why does something that's supposedly healthy become harmful, and how?
Exactly.
Right, well, exercise addiction is like other behavioral addictions in the sense that you pursue something, and a behavioral addiction is like a substance addiction, in that you pursue something initially because it's pleasurable. And pleasurable can entail all sorts of different things. For people who like to exercise, often it's the exercise high, but a lot of it, too, is the social reinforcement you get for going to the gym all the time. And then you feel better about the way you look naked, or you feel better because your partner thinks you look better naked, or something like that. There's a lot of pleasurable affects that derive from going to the gym a lot, including a better focus, more energy, less fatigue, better mood. So that's how it starts, and that's all fine and good. But for some people, people who may be prone to addiction in the first place, people who tend to be more neurotic, people who may have an eating disorder or other body image issue or are very perfectionistic, they may approach exercise first as a means to feel better, but then feel like they are unable to stop or scale back or mediate their engagement in exercise. You know, slowly but surely, the exercise will start to eclipse their life. You know, they will maybe start to miss meetings. They will start canceling social plans. They will have an injury, but, you know, despite medical advice, will continue to go to the gym. They will balk at the idea of an off day. You know, they will get very, very anxious and feel symptoms of withdrawal on days when they can't get to the gym at all or as planned. A lot of the times, those withdrawal symptoms, while they won't be the withdrawal symptoms you'd see if somebody was coming off of heroin, they are still rather serious. A lot of them are emotional, anxiety, irritability, you know, mood swings, and some of them are physical, fatigue, achiness. You know, they really experience like they're coming off of a drug, and it's that inability to scale back or stop or flexibly integrate exercise into their lives that really stands as a big, big warning sign that this is not as healthy as we'd like. But unfortunately, that very inflexibility is often misinterpreted by people as a sign of just, you know, ideal health. And it's definitely not.
Right. Now, I think for a lot of listeners, the issue they might have is, well, okay, what is the baseline for what is considered healthy exercise? And I'm sure that in your work and in looking at studies and that, you probably do understand that there's a certain amount of exercise that's healthy, and then right. There's a line that you cross. So could you talk a little about what we would perceive as a healthy exercise regimen?
Right. So, The government recommends, you know, a minimum of 150 to 300 minutes per week doing moderate to strenuous activity. This is for most adults, you know, who are relatively healthy and don't have any injuries. So there's like a basic amount that you want to do. You want to try and get up each day. You know, you want to get up from your desk. You don't, being sedentary is not good. So you want to shoot for 150 to 300 minutes per week. Now, the government guidelines, they say, you know, more exercise is associated with more benefits. The big problem here, I mean, this is all fine because a lot of us need to be motivated to get off the couch to begin with, and this is all fine and good, but the statement, you know, more is always better, that is not true. There is, unfortunately, scant research to speak to the upper limits of exercise. And that's usually the problem, is that we don't have an idea of when enough is enough. Now, some studies look at, you know, getting more than 14 hours of exercise a week as being like, that's enough, you know, and there's studies looking at long-term marathon runners, long-term endurance athletes that find that these types of people have more heart scarring, higher chances of developing arrhythmias, increased risk of developing, believe it or not, cardiac, the plaque in your heart that can lead to cardiac arrest. So there are these issues, and they're not really being highlighted as much because, you know, there's a number of reasons why. I think that there is a bigger issue of trying to get people up off the couch, you know, that kind of pushes the severity of the consequences of getting up off the couch too much to the side. But a lot of it is, you know, this upper limit is really not well articulated.
I think it would be helpful for you to go a little further into detail about this idea that people who are marathoners, Ironmen, you know, who really go to extremes, we'll say that, you know, they're probably 5 or 10% of the population will go to that extreme. Why is it that it's actually not healthy, or why are you finding that it's not healthy, especially when people are, you know, supposedly at the tip top of physical shape?
Right. So it's fine to be at the tip top of physical shape, but it's a question of, you're part of being at the tip top of physical health and being in the best shape ever is knowing when to take off days. and knowing when to rest and digest. I mean, the body needs both. You know, just like we can't go a full day without sleeping, we can't pummel our bodies day in and day out. We'll get injured. We will, for women, they can lose their menstrual period. Men experience dips in testosterone, you know, when they're not giving their bodies a lot of time to recover. You know, in more extreme cases, you have something called rhabdomyolysis, and that's the breakdown of muscle contents in the bloodstream, which results in kidney failure, which is terrifying. You know, on lesser levels, but still severe levels, you have herniated discs, stress fractures, broken bones, increased risk for osteoporosis. Like I said before, heart scarring, atrial fibrillation. And, you know, the people that I think are able to manage a strenuous exercise level throughout their lives also are the ones who balance that with enough rest. I mean, the top athletes of the world take off days, and they supplement their exercise regimen with recovery activities as well as nutrition. Now, the problem with somebody who suffers from exercise addiction is that they often fail to do the same things that pro athletes do to recover adequately, because they feel so compelled to go to the gym or to do their daily run or whatever it is that they do, you know, that they sideline that other half. You know, the body needs to rest and digest. The body needs to recover and repair. And if you don't let it do that, that's when you get into the issue. So it is interesting with looking at the long-term marathon runners, because these are also people who have, you know, sustained a running career over their whole life. I don't know the specifics of whether these people have exercise addiction or not. I know that rates of exercise addiction are higher amongst regular runners. I believe it's about 25%. Amongst triathletes, it's even higher. It's almost half of them. Mm-hmm. So that obviously the numbers are higher because you kind of need that addictive feel to sustain that. It's an interesting question, you know, with how do you continue to do this thing day in and day out and not have exercise addiction? And I don't know of the research, but I would assume that the people who can actually carry on these longer, you know, careers in exercise are the people that do it more moderately.
Right. Yeah, it sounds like the professionals are able to set aside time for nutrition and rest because they know their body better. Maybe a lot of these folks are not, you know, they don't have trainers and things like that. But talk a little about the psychological makeup of a exercise addict, or, you know, the precursors. What type of personality is the person that's, you know, prone to being an exercise addict? Get this podcast delivered to you automatically. You can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and more. You'll find the links here or on our website, digdeepgrow.com.
Right. So there have been a lot of studies that look into personality factors. And some of them are, I mean, it's interesting. I'll say this other thing in a second, but to start out, there's evidence that people high in neuroticism, low agreeability, even extroversion are more prone to become exercise addicts. People who are narcissistic might be slightly more inclined to become exercise addicts because they get obsessed with how they look, or they get obsessed with muscularity or thinness. Low self-esteem is a huge risk factor. That said, low self-esteem is a huge risk factor for anything. Mm-hmm. I just recently read a study that the athletes, child athletes whose parents are over-controlling have been found to have more exercise addiction symptoms than their peers whose parents are less controlling. Mm-hmm. So that's like a basic overview. And again, I want to say that just because you have these traits doesn't mean you're going to do exercise. In fact, there was one study that even found people that had none of these traits exhibited symptoms of exercise addiction. So it does kind of confound it. I think it's safe to say that there's obsessive tendencies, addictive tendencies. Oftentimes, exercise addicts do other behavioral or substance addictions. It's common, you know, for exercise addicts to also transfer their addiction. The research has spread to other forms of shopping addiction or sex addiction. So those are some basic risk factors.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it sounds as if there are pretty much a particular kind of individual would be prone to this. And when you were describing it, I thought maybe type A type of personality, the go-getter in business, entrepreneurs, would they be more inclined to have this addiction quality? Or
what absolutely, and those are the absolutely, and that is found in many studies, and that kind of falls in line with the perfectionism and that obsession and that pursuit of the goal, you know, tunnel vision pursuit of the goal. And an ability to just kind of sideline all, if you will, emotional attachments, whatever it is, to get that thing that they want, which mm-hmm. is optimal success in a career. It's that social climbing kind of mentality. And you can see this on the faces, I think, of people at the gym. You know, when you look at the people that are on the different exercise equipment, I mean, there's sometimes facial expressions. They're so driven, as if it's like this kind of weirdly channeled rage that is a little scary to watch. But you're like, that's the person that's there every day, and that they. I go to the gym and they're on the treadmill, and I leave the gym and they're still on the treadmill.
Uh-huh.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. So all right. So if you're looking at a typical addict and they don't know they're an addict, what should they be asking themselves, or what should they be looking at?
Did you say that their friends and family members, or are you saying
individually? I'm talking about, let's say that I have such a tendency, but I have no clue that I am an addict. What are the things that I can
right.
look at in myself so that I understand it better?
Right. Well, a big sign that your exercise habits are becoming a problem is, like I said before, when you get an injury and you know you're not supposed to persist going to the gym or doing a certain exercise that exacerbates that injury, but you do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be aware of, is my exercise habit causing more suffering than it's alleviating?
Mm.
Are my friends and family getting concerned? Is my work suffering? Am I just more agitated and irritable? Am I not sleeping well? Am I obsessed with my exercise so that I'm thinking about it when I'm not doing it? I might lose sleep over it, but I also might be like checking out of meetings at work because I'm thinking, okay, well, am I going to do arms today, and am I going to do legs, and how many squats am I going to do, and what time am I going to time my oatmeal when I eat, and when am I going to recover? I mean, it's this obsessive cycle. Sometimes, you know, an exercise addict is definitely, they're unaware of their habits because they're like, but it's healthy. They say to themselves, it's healthy. It's healthy. But is it? I mean, is it if you're getting injured, if you're getting sick,
mm-hmm.
if it's ruining relationships and impairing your ability to be vulnerable and intimate with other people? Is it pulling you away from the world more than it's enabling you to plug in? Because the optimal fitness, it's being able to do your run or do your yoga or do your exercise class, and then that enables you to more adeptly deal with the world. It can certainly be a stress management tool, but if it's the only coping skill you have, that's an issue. It's always about flexibility, right? If everything comes down to that, everything in moderation, even exercise.
So you mentioned before that they do have this narcissistic tendency. Does that mean that they're really kind of not as social as the average person is?
Well, I don't say all exercises have a narcissistic personality trait. Some of them do. There are people that suffer from this that are more antisocial. And if you think about it, I mean, that kind of goes to the course of just spending more time at the gym. If you do end up, you make decisions. You say, well, am I going to go to this happy hour, or am I going to go work out after office hours? And the degree to which people tend towards the gym over social interaction, yes, you could say that's an antisocial behavior. But are they, like, or triad antisocial. That's a little murky. I don't think we can make a general blanket statement. So I would say in some cases, yes, but not in all cases. And I think, too, when exercise addiction is an arm of an eating disorder, which about half of all eating disordered individuals use exercise in an unhealthy and addictive way, and they display symptoms of exercise addiction. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times, those people do struggle with, saying yes too many times in social situations, always wanting to please. So it's not necessarily antisocial, and it's also not really pro-social, but it's more of a people pleaser. I want to be perfect. I want to organize my life around everybody liking me, and to do that, I'm going to have to just compensate for every single calorie I burn. I mean, that's when exercise addiction is an arm of an eating disorder. So it's complicated. It's a case-by-case basis.
Do you think that this behavior has grown in severity over at the same time that we've had social media? Because, when you were just talking, I thought, well, wow, a lot of people get on social media to, display their colorful feathers in a way. And so it's kind of, so I'm just wondering if it tracks at all with what we've seen with online social media.
Well, that's a very interesting question. The symptoms of exercise addiction, as I get into in my book, have been around since, the Greek and Roman era. There's descriptions in old texts of athletes who they don't do anything for their minds. They laze around all day and only, devote their existence to working out, but the rest of the time they're fatigued. There's an interesting chapter in our book where we go into the history of it. So it's been around forever, as long as, humans have been able to exercise. But I do think that the culture of fitspiration and thinspiration have a wider reach, and social media gets those messages out there into people's heads and maybe inflating the problem, maybe fueling the problem in people who are vulnerable. It may be that those types of people would be vulnerable to develop an addiction of some sort to begin with, but they choose to become addicted to exercise because it's just so positively reinforced. And sure, there's a competitive culture online with people posting how many miles they've run or how many pounds they've lost. We love The Biggest Loser. We're obsessed with weight loss shows. There is this kind of, there is an obsession with fitness in our culture that I think, one of the points that I make in my book that masks the symptoms of exercise addiction and also continues to justify it and probably exacerbates it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you talk about, in your book, you have stories of individuals who have had the issue, sufferers. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about maybe one of those just so people can get an idea of a real-life case?
Definitely. Well, I have a few. I think it would be better to talk about mine just because I don't want to misrepresent anybody's story.
Okay.
I got to talk about another few, but I'll give you a few examples. Well, one is me. I mean, I've been addicted to exercise for a while. It started when I was, I always had body image issues. I was at risk from an early age, I think. I had horrible body image issues. I always just hated my skin, hated myself. I struggled when I was about 13 years old, believe it or not, with substance abuse issues. My parents sent me away to a boot camp program in Naples, Idaho, and then I lived in a residential facility. And I started, when I didn't have access to the substances that I previously used, I started sneaking off to my room to do jumping jacks and push-ups and all these exercises, which were in themselves, they were fine. It's fine to do that. But it wasn't a way of being, of feeling better, being healthy. It was a way to pummel myself and control myself and feel contained. And it became very obsessive. Over the next decade or so, throughout high school and college, it would just, what started out as, I'll just do 20 minutes at the gym, soon became an hour and 20, soon became 2 hours. Mm. You know, I had to go every day. I couldn't travel because I was, where would I get to the gym if I traveled?
Mm-hmm.
Relationships were difficult. Every part of my life was complicated by the fact that I had to prioritize my workouts all the time. I was anxious about them all the time. I mean, it just, it burgeoned. I mean, and it was like I would exercise through a herniated disc. I had a stress fracture. I exercised through that. It was nonstop. And I at one point checked myself into an eating disorder facility thinking that was the problem. But while I have struggled on and off with my food, it was really the exercise that was the core of it. I feel like I nicked the food issue, but the exercise always lingered there as this obsessive thing. And I think it's because it's an addiction I could get away with in the modern world. That said, I've taken measures to deal with it because I see how significantly it's impaired my life and my work and my relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So I began seeing a cognitive behavioral therapist. I have a prescription for anti-anxiety medication because that kind of helps deal with the symptoms of withdrawal. And I've also just forced myself with the encouragement of my fiancé to pursue things that I love that trump exercise's importance in my life, other ways that I can express myself, and that's mainly through writing. And to be honest, writing this book was an incredibly healing process for me.
Right.
And I'm getting into this MFA program and working on a second manuscript is just really, you know, putting work ahead of the gym and not, you know, it's basically been a couple years of just forcing myself to change my habits, and it's working. I mean, I do make a point to get to the gym regularly. I always will. I love being physically active, but I don't feel it's as addictive. I don't feel that I meet the symptoms as much as I used to. And those strategies have been shown to work. I mean, for the other people in my book, interestingly enough, we have a triathlete in there. We have someone who struggles primarily with an eating disorder first. So his exercise addiction was what we would call secondary, and that's when it's the arm of an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But he was obsessed with exercise, so much so that he would, you know, his schoolwork suffered. He would faint trying to go up the stairs to his dorm room. And he got help. He worked with a therapist. He worked with a coach. Because he wanted to keep exercise as a healthy part of his life. He ended up learning how to do it correctly, and suddenly, you know, his coach thought, my God, you have a potential to be an amazing athlete. And you know, that's an interesting thing, because, like, oh, well, did he just transfer his addiction? It seems that he's doing okay, because he does not report feeling anxious on the days that he has to take off, and he knows that he does have to take those off days to enhance his performance. And so he's changed around his life where he eats normally now. He's in a very healthy place. When he has an injury, he scales back. We have another girl in our book who decided that for her, quitting the gym altogether was better because it was too difficult for her to be around that culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, that can be very triggering for people if they've suffered with exercise addiction to go back to the gym when they're perhaps maybe they've taken like a few weeks off to just get, you know, a lot of the times that's recommended that you take a significant amount of time off because you need to recalibrate. You know, you need to feel what it's like to sit in your skin and know that the discomfort you feel will pass and that there's alternative ways of mitigating that. There's alternative coping strategies. So one woman decided to quit the gym altogether, and she is happier and healthier than she's ever been.
Nice.
You know, we have one woman that did so much damage to her body exercising that she physically can't go to the gym anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, it's a case-by-case basis for everybody. But what the research is showing, again, it's in its very incipient stages, research is suggesting that a combination of cognitive behavioral therapy, exercise reprogramming, in many cases working with a trainer who knows about exercise addiction and knows to avoid phrasing advice in terms of, you know, never stop, you know, it's okay if you want to throw up, you know, no, those, the exercise addict already thinks those things. You don't need to say that. You really want to help that kind of person develop a more intuitive exercise plan. And also, you know, in some cases, antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications, because many times people may be using exercise in an addictive way to deal with an underlying mood or personality disorder that, mm-hmm. that remains hidden because it seems that the exercise addiction is the main problem. And it can certainly be a huge problem, but sometimes it's really like the true fire under there is a mood disorder, a personality disorder.
Is there a you mentioned personal trainers, you know, as a natural, you know, first step, someone who might exercise a lot, maybe to an extreme, could consult a personal trainer who might be able to look at their regimen and say, whoa, you know, back up. Or, you know, I mean, I guess the question is are personal trainers in general aware enough to know or see the signs of exercise addiction, or are they part of the problem?
This is a great question. I think a lot of personal trainers are not aware of this being a problem because it's basically their job to motivate you to go to the gym more and to use their services more. You know, so in some ways, and this is a kind of a controversial statement, I do think that an exercise addict is like the ideal client for a personal trainer because that person will, you know, want to use their services all the time, want to always boost up. But I think that there are certain exercise professionals, trainers, who are aware of the problem, and there's a phenomenal program designed by an eating disorder expert named Jody Rubin, and it's called Destructively Fit, and she trains personal trainers to identify signs of unhealthy exercise habits in their clients, and she enables them to work with those types of clients. So more programs like that and trainers do need to be more aware of this, but it's hard because in many ways the fitness industry incentivizes them not to be aware of it. I mean, I've worked with so many trainers that are like, Matt, I wish I had your drive. And I'm like, no, you don't. And you're, please don't say that, you know?
Yes. All right. Well, thanks for that tip. The name of the book is The Truth About Exercise Addiction, Understanding the Dark Side of Thinspiration. I'm talking with Catherine Schreiber. I wanted to go back to what you said about your own story, Catherine. How did you turn the corner? Were you getting feedback from your loved ones, your friends, saying, hey, you know, back off a little, you know, we miss you? Or was it really more of a personal introspection that caused you to, you know, seek the healing on that addiction?
Yeah, so I would say it was an accumulation of all of the above. Every time I would get an injury, I would say, okay, this is an issue. When I went to Israel with my fiance before we got engaged, and it really stuck out to me then because he pointed out, he's like, hey, we are in Israel for 10 days, and all you care about is finding a gym. And it was like, it so impeded our mutual enjoyment of the vacation that it was so blatantly obvious that this was an issue. And he's someone who goes to the gym pretty much every day, but he does it in a healthy way, and he does take off days, and, you know, he's flexible with it. And I just saw the contrast, and I saw how much conflict it brought into our relationship and also kind of ruined a lot of the vacation. I mean, it was still a good vacation, but that was part of it. There was a significant moment where I was doing yoga in my apartment, and I kicked over a glass, and it broke on my forehead. And there was blood gushing out of my forehead, and I said, well, I can't see a medical professional yet because I have to finish my yoga routine. And that was, I knew in that moment, I knew it was insane, but I was like, well, I have to finish stretching. Like, I have to do this routine. I did not seek medical help until I was done with the routine, and I probably worsened the injury because of it. You know, I have a scar on my face from that. Then, you know, I mean, my whole life I've had people make comments about my gym habits, but the interesting and difficult thing for me was that so many of those comments that indicated a slight hint of concern were also linked with reinforcements of what I was doing. Positive reinforcements was, wow, you know, I mean, I miss you. We're not hanging out enough, but gee, I wish I had your drive, like that personal trainer that I spoke of earlier. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, wow, I mean, you're crazy. You're insane. You go to the gym so much. Wow, I mean, you're so skinny. Are you okay? Well, I guess it's exercise. It's healthy. Oh, you have. And then even when I started to say, I think I'm addicted to exercise. The first response people have is always, well, gee, I wish I had that addiction. Or, you know, that's the best addiction to have.
Right.
And it is most certainly not. So it was an accumulation of all those things that really, and you know what, to be honest with you, I think it was a self-assessment that started with the article I wrote for Greatest, you know, and grew as I did the research for the book, collaborated with my co-author, Heather Hasenbloch. I mean, her insights and all the research we reviewed together for the book and covered and doing the cultural analysis of inspiration, I mean, it really solidified my conviction that it is a legitimate issue and that I need to change my behavior if I am to live a fully fit and happy life.
Right. That totally makes sense. You know, I don't know how much your book goes into actual exercise routines or the types of exercises that people do, but, you know, you really struck a chord from something that I heard in an interview with a sports trainer who said, you know, some of the exercise that we have come to know as, you know, the aerobic workout, running, things that we always thought were really great forms of exercise. Now, it seems like the health feedback, you know, the actual studies and things are showing that a short bursts, you know, strength training, short sprints, things like that, where you have rest in between, is showing itself to be more healthy than, say, going on a run for 30 minutes or being at a high heartbeat rate for X amount of time. How does that sit with you?
Right. So there is a fascinating amount of research into that high intensity exercise and its benefits over prolonged aerobic activity that's at a lower intensity. So there's a few things. I mean, I think all that stuff is great. It's so helpful for us to know the science behind what optimizes our bodies and what makes us function better. In terms of how that applies to exercise addiction, mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter the type or intensity of the exercise. And in fact, not all exercise addicts look explosively buff or bone thin. You know, there's mm-hmm. a wide range. And it's all about the mindset. So a person who does not suffer from exercise addiction will hear that advice about the high intensity exercise and think, well, that's interesting. And, you know, and if they're, you know, in the mindset of pro fitness, you know, they'll say, that's interesting, I want to add that to my workout, you know, try it a bit, see how it affects me, that's a good idea. An exercise addict might say, well, I have to do that, and I have to do that every day. You know, they would get obsessive about it. It wouldn't be flexibly integrated. Mm-hmm. So I think all that science is great. And I actually think it's kind of reassuring to know, oh, God, I don't have to spend that much time at the gym to achieve these effects. In fact, there's some evidence that spending too much time at the gym, and this is what will make any exercise addict go crazy, spending too much time in the gym can actually reverse your fitness goals in the sense that it can make you put on more abdominal fat, it can screw with your metabolism, it can screw with your blood sugar, all this like, awful stuff. So I think the high-intensity stuff is great, but that's not to say that you always have to do it every time. I wrote an article for Greatest.com about the benefits of low-intensity workouts despite that, and that, you know, addressing the question, should your workout always crush you? You can't do that every day. Again, your body needs to rest and recover. So do it when you can, enjoy it, and love it. And that's another important thing. Whatever exercise you do, you have to enjoy it. You're not going to want to sustain something you don't enjoy. And if exercise is a way of just punishing yourself, unless you're addicted to exercise, you're not going to continue it. If you are addicted to exercise, it's just going to be fuel to self-destruct.
Yeah, that's a good wisdom you're offering there. The book is called Truth The Truth About Exercise Addiction, Understanding the Dark Side of Thinspiration by Catherine Schreiber. And Catherine, that book is coming out as we speak, is that right?
Yep, on the 16th, it'll be on shelves.
Excellent. So by the time you're listening to this, the book will be available. So do go out and get it. It'll be on Amazon, etc. The one takeaway that image that I'll share that I took away from our talk today, Catherine, is when you go to the gym, if you've got that stern look on your face, look around, mm-hmm. look at the people around you, and look who has a smile on their face, and the ones who have a grimace, and that may give you a little personal feedback about who you are, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, thanks for joining me today, and you say you have another book in the works, so I'll look forward to maybe talking to you on that one too.
Thank you so much, Michael. It was a pleasure to speak to you.
Excellent.